This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, 6 minutes past seven. It is the 7th of December 2020. And today at 8:45, we'll dive into Fitch Ratings' recent downgrade of the country's sovereign ratings with analysis from Thomas Rookmarker, Fitch's primary sovereign analyst for Malaysia. So don't miss that, because that's going to be quite, I think, incisive in terms of how he and Fitch are looking at Malaysia's finances, and in particular, the political landscape.
Yeah, and also the rationale for their downgrade, which is very important. I think it's something definitely worth listening to, and also possibly maybe the ramifications. But in about 15 minutes, we'll also be speaking to Firdaus Rosli, senior economist at Malaysian Rating Corporation Berhad Ahmad, on the extended CMCO and its potential economic impact. But in the meantime, let's talk about markets, because as we know, the Dow Jones was up 0.8%, S&P 500 was up 0.9%, while the Nasdaq was up 0.7%. Meanwhile, if we look at Asia, pretty much a green day for us too. Only the Nikkei was down 0.2%. The KLCI was down 0.4%. Meanwhile, the Hang Seng Index was up 0.4%. KOSPI was up 1.3%. Shanghai was up 0.1%, while the Straits Times Index in Singapore was up 0.6%.
I wonder how Malaysia is going to do this week. In fact, I wonder how Asia is going to do this week, given all the all the crosswinds in terms of the pandemic, the vaccine. I mean, we've had a nice few last couple of weeks in terms of optimism about the recovery. Recovery stocks have been coming in. The good news on vaccines. I think at last count, there was three from the Western world.
Yeah.
The AstraZeneca Oxford University one, then you had the Pfizer one, then you had the Moderna one. And I think there was a lot of talk in terms of the temperatures that you had to be freezing the vaccines in to come to all over the world.
Or one dose or two doses. I mean, those were the question marks, right? But definitely around the world, we did see this rotational play into the cyclical stocks. So the clear beneficiaries of this, of course, have been finance, actually, which has been much under love for the last 1 year. I think the other winners, of course, are aviation, hospitality related. Even retail has seen some revival.
Yeah, not just in Malaysia, but in the world as well. Notably, Warren Buffett bought a position in Barrick Gold, remember? And I checked Barrick Gold's position the other day. He hasn't done too well in that investment. It's a small one in terms of relative to Berkshire Hathaway. But in the meantime, on global markets, we've got on the line with us Kingsley Jones, Chief Investment Officer for Jevons Global in Australia. Kingsley, thank you for talking to us. Now, the MSCI Asia Pacific Index hit a record high for the year, even though the recovery hasn't been keeping quite pace with equity prices. Are you expecting this center rally to continue, and or will there be a correction in valuations?
Well, I think that the market is running a little bit ahead of actually what the numbers are showing in terms of earnings and revenues, but that's warranted. We feel we've got a cyclical recovery happening now, and emerging markets in general and Asia in particular are pretty cheap if you look at them historically. So I think we'll probably see this rally continue and maybe even broaden some. China data is good, and there's a bit of a boom going on in consumer electronics, which is great for a range of Asian producers. And then we have an auto recovery as well.
If we look at specific sectors, right, is it time to relook at some of the unloved sectors earlier in the year? So I'm talking about like financials, aviation and tourism.
Certainly financials and energy, absolutely. There has been obviously a lot of volatility in those cyclical sectors you mentioned, the aviation ones and also tourism. And of course, it's warranted to play that in terms of when that recovery comes. But I think we might see a couple of different goes at it simply because, as you know, offshore and around the world, COVID is still a pretty big story, notwithstanding the vaccine use. So, yeah, look, it's going to be an interesting one to watch just to see when that recovery takes hold.
Now, obviously in Singapore, Kingsley, the issuance of 4 digital banking licenses, what does it mean, I think, even in the medium term, not even in the long term, what does it mean for the incumbent establishment banks there? Can they find a way to work together, or is it just a winner-takes-all scenario?
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? I think that what we've learned about digital banking so far is that you can build these compelling offers in terms of the customer service and experience at relatively low capital cost in terms of the software and also the delivery of it. But where it gets expensive is customer acquisition. So I think in a market like Singapore, which is already solidly banked, shall we say, by some leading names there, it will be difficult to, so to say, eat their lunch. But I suspect that the game plan for these new entrants is to get bought out. And maybe that's why we got 4 of them, one for each.
But I want to ask another question, and that's regarding oil, because OPEC Plus finally came to a consensus last week, which will see a modest production increase in January next year. Now, what is their rationale for that decision? Do they foresee a pickup in demand?
Gee, it's a really great question, isn't it? Because the thing is that we know that this oil market has been under enormous pressure, and we're unsure about what the future really looks like for fossil fuels. But the thing about OPEC is that they really have the lowest cost production game in town, right, as compared to, say, shale, which is getting lower, and then the high cost stuff. So I think that OPEC is really probably just trying to defend market share. So they're confident that prices are robust enough that they can increase a bit of production, and they probably want to stop prices racing away too much so that we don't get a big restart of the US unconventional shale industry.
One last question. I'm sure you noticed that Malaysia has been downgraded our sovereign rating for the in terms of our ringgit. Do you see that being an issue in terms of being able to attract capital, future capital flow? And perhaps what kind of perception would foreign investors have of our capital markets now, though?
Yeah, they're good questions. I think that a lot of the political turmoil that had kept people out of Malaysia earlier seems to have passed now. And the other factor that we mustn't forget is that Malaysia having a big oil sector, you know, these low prices have been poor for the balance of payments, as it were. So I think that that's probably what's really going on. But from another perspective, I mean, Malaysia's pretty well set up in the wider Asia Pacific region to pick up some of that trade spill overflow from China. As we get these trade wars develop and people, you know, they just sort of extend their supply chains. They don't stop trading with China. They just start to look actively at other places where they can diversify. And Malaysia's got a great electronics manufacturing assembly business. And I think that they're well placed to come out of this with some new capital investment on what are, you know, relatively attractive conditions. And we shouldn't forget, you know, it's a nation that has a highly educated population, right up next door to Singapore in terms of banking and finance. So there ought to be a track out of this, which is positive for Malaysia, and investors will be attracted to that. And I note that they actually are buying the index.
Thanks ever so much for your time. That was Kingsley Jones of Jevons Global out of Australia. Now, obviously, interesting points of view on Fitch Ratings' view of Malaysia, as well as of our position from an FDI perspective. But talking about the trade talks, TikTok is back in the news, but this time because a deadline for ByteDance to restructure the operations in America, I think, has passed without a deal. The Chinese company is still in advanced talks about TikTok's status in the US, and sources have told the FT, where the story is from, that the Committee on Foreign Investment in the US, which is reviewing ByteDance's ownership, has not approved the deal by the deadline on Friday. So that deadline has actually passed, and TikTok continues to operate in America.
Yeah, and this is after the deadline, after the committee would not grant an extension after already delaying the deadline twice in recent weeks. So the sources added that the committee was not expected to take any immediate action against ByteDance as the parties remain in advanced talks about a deal. So the US Treasury Department said that the committee was engaging with ByteDance to complete the divestment and other steps necessary to resolve the national security risks arising from the transaction. And the developments, which was first reported by Reuters, added to the uncertainty surrounding TikTok as ByteDance works to secure a deal guaranteeing the popular app future in the US.
Yeah, and of course, the nearer you get to the January deadline, the nearer you get to the transition of the presidency. And who knows where Joe Biden will sit on the whole US-China relationship, and specifically with the whole TikTok ByteDance development.
And 5G, let's not forget.
And 5G as well,
yeah,
right?
That's another big discussion going on.
Okay, Pfizer, India, has applied to the drug regulator in the second most populous country in the world for emergency use authorization for the COVID-19 vaccine, which they have developed. Now, after the parents received clearance for the treatment from Britain and Bahrain, according to the Press Trust of India.
So this looks like they're the third country to apply for this approval. Now, the news agency said, citing an unidentified official, that the company sought permission to import the vaccine for sale and distribution in India without the requirement for clinical trials on local people in accordance with the special provisions under the new drugs and clinical trial rules. Now, the report added that Pfizer is the first drug maker to seek approval in India and submitted their application on December 4th.
Of course, juries are out all over the world in terms of whether you want to be one of the first few people to receive the vaccine. There have been reports all over the world about various effects, adverse and otherwise, from the vaccine.
I think that's to be questioned. I mean, we will find out. I think there needs to be transparency in terms of the data, and you know, governments will make have to make their decisions. But I think interesting conversations going forward will be: will governments make it compulsory? Will it be mandated? Will companies make it compulsory before they allow their employees to come back to work?
And in fact, will
airlines, for example, Qantas has already said that they are going to make it compulsory.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a sensitive issue to say the least, right? Okay, very quickly, Japan is going to invest $4 billion in Indonesia's planned sovereign wealth fund through the JBIC, the Japan Bank for International Cooperation. And this is called the Nusantara Investment Authority, otherwise known as NIA. Okay, 7:17, we'll come back after this with more news, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.